For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
And Esme is off this evening. Moose Miller in on what has been kind of a, I don't know, rainy, dreary kind of day. But if you're a Gopher fan, you got a lot to cheer about. That 24-17 win over Illinois, we'll take that. And as we just heard in the weather, it looks like tomorrow things start to improve for tailgating weather as the Vikings get set to do their thing against the Ravens. So let's set the table as to what we have cooking here this evening on WCCO. At around 6:35 or so, we're going to catch up with a musician by the name of Dar Williams. She's also an author who, for the last, 20-some years, over two decades, has been traveling all over the country as a musician. She gets hired to come in and perform gigs and play music. And she started to notice some common denominators. One thing she calls, I think it's positive proximity, that she put into this book that we're going to talk about. And yes, she's been to a number of cities and towns here in Minnesota. And we'll get her take on what she thinks of certain cities around the state of Minnesota. Duluth, St. Cloud, in and around the Twin Cities here. And she has some really interesting observations as to what brings a town, because a town's a lot smaller, right? Alive. And some towns just have it going on more so than others. And it's something that an out-of-town musician like herself has really kind of picked up on. She says you can sense it pretty quick after you kind of tune your radar as to what to look for and listen for. So we'll talk about that coming up here around 6:35 this evening. Got to talk a little cybersecurity. Paul Wegenseel is going to join us from tomsguide.com. You heard about this latest Wi-Fi network hack? Well, that's scary. So now they can hack into the code of a Wi-Fi system and then, I guess, remotely check in on it and kind of set up like a fishing net, see what's going through there. Well, how do you protect yourself or your business against stuff like that? And you know, is this just the beginning of a new type of concern? Because when you're using public Wi-Fi systems, whether it's, you know, at a bank or a coffee place or a restaurant, you got to wonder, right? Is it that legitimate one for that establishment? Or is it somebody sitting out in a van in South Minneapolis where we have so many great little restaurants and brew pubs and microbreweries creating a fake Wi-Fi? And if you happen to be doing some banking, look out. So we'll talk about that coming up here at 7:08 this evening. And with Harvey Weinstein in the news, oh my goodness, man, this guy, every time you turn around, there's another woman coming forward. So what does it mean for companies like the Weinstein Company that if they knew about this behavior, or it sounds like they even wrote the contract so that there was a staggered or laddered series of fines or whatever that he would pay? Well, doesn't that open up the business to some liability? So we'll talk about that coming up at 7:35 this evening. Karen Nelson Schaefer is going to join us. She is a local employment attorney. And as you look at the Weinstein case, it just kind of, I think, reminds us that, you know, it's not just Harvey Weinstein. This is something that's been going on for some time now. So we'll explore that. And Professor David Schultz will be back with us from Hamline University. We got a lot, to talk about in politics, not only here in Minnesota, but also, you know, obviously what's been going on this past week with the president and General Kelly, the chief of staff. And so we'll get into all of that coming up between 7 or 8:30 and 9 this evening here on WCCO. But right now, we thought it'd be a good idea to just soak up a little bit of fall, right? And see what's going on. Put some ideas in your head for things to do here the next couple of weeks. Alyssa Hayes from Explore Minnesota. And they got a great website, by the way, and awesome ability, too, to pull things up on your phone. She's with Explore Minnesota, and she joins us here on WCCO. Good evening and welcome.
Thanks for having me. Happy fall.
You know, this website, exploreminnesota.com, there's a lot of info in here. This is a great handy-dandy little tool, and I believe you can pull that up on your phone as well, right?
You absolutely can, and we like to call this not only the land of 10,000 lakes here in Minnesota, but it's the land of 10,000 things to do.
And places to eat, festivals, all kinds of interesting ideas, and places to stay. You know, with fall colors upon us, that's a handy-dandy little place to jump on right now.
That's right. Explore Minnesota tracks fall colors through the end of this month. So be sure to check in because fall colors across the state right now, a lot of places are at their peak. So it's not going to last long. This season is pretty short and sweet.
But when you pull it up on your phone or your computer, you can kind of see where the best color, you know, is happening right now, almost kind of in real time. It's great stuff.
That's right. ExploreMinnesota.com/fall color for the next, what do we got? 2 weeks almost.
Sure.
A little less.
Yeah. And we'll start with this one, 10 things to do in Minnesota this fall. You can find it at ExploreMinnesota.com. Starting with visiting a pumpkin patch. Do you happen to have a favorite one around the Twin Cities that you like to hit?
I don't like to pick favorites because there are way too many to choose from, but we have more than 140 pumpkin patches across the state, according to the Minnesota Grown Directory. So there's really no shortage wherever you are across the state.
And that's something we should emphasize here, Minnesota Grown. Because, you know, there's nothing wrong with the operations that bring in pumpkins from other parts of the, you know, the Midwest and whatnot. But, you know, if you want your dollar to go to somebody that, you know, grew it right here in Minnesota and maybe runs an operation, something to keep in mind, I think, for sure, right?
That's right. And think about all of the apple orchards across the state, too. We've got some of the best apples in the nation here, including the McIntosh and the Honeycrisp.
I was going to ask you, have you heard much about, you know, how our summer went and because of the way the weather was this year, that the apple ripening kind of occurred a little bit earlier? I know over in Wisconsin they were talking about that it was like, hey, get out here now because these apples are ready.
You know, I didn't hear much about it, but I did indulge, and they're delicious.
For sure. Plus, the other thing they have with the apple orchards and the pumpkin patches is you've got corn mazes, you've got, you know, stuff for the family to do, petting zoos, all of that kind of stuff.
Oh, I love it. There's something to keep you busy, you know, throughout the day that you're at the pumpkin patch or the apple orchard. There's mazes. A lot of the time there's apple cider, or maybe there's apple-flavored mini donuts. You know, those are some of my favorite things about visiting an apple orchard. But, yeah, plenty of to do to entertain any age in the family, really.
Wow, I'm going to have to try that. Apple-flavored mini donuts.
Oh, yeah. Those are really good.
Yeah. See, I take it you're in a 12-step program for that right now. Okay.
Got it. Right. Apple everything. Apple and pumpkin everything all fall.
Yeah, no kidding. How about number 3 on the list? Visit a museum.
That's right. This is good. You know, we've had a really favorable season for weather. I mean, very warm fall, which has been great. I think people are really living it up with this wonderful warm and sunny weather. But, you know, if there's a cold or rainy day, you know, duck into a museum. There's plenty of those across the state. And the best part about a museum is It's fun while the kids are learning.
Yeah. Well, we should point out, too, the Children's Museum in St. Paul that recently reopened.
Yeah, the Children's Museum recently reopened in 2017. And then another one that is new and improved across the state, one of my favorites, is the Spam Museum down in Austin, Minnesota.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have relatives that farm down in Iowa, and I'm trying to, you know, make a little pilgrimage to there. And, you know, on the way south, that's always a great place to stop off and just check out.
Oh, it's such a fun and colorful museum. If anybody is in the Instagramming, that is such an Instagram-worthy museum because of the pop of colors throughout the museum.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Spam's history and Minnesota's history and the war effort and everything else is just amazing. And I think they point out in there, in Hawaii, that I think Hawaii per capita is the largest consumer of Spam. Did you know that?
They are. Yes, I did know that, which is so, it's so funny. I love that. They have all the great Spam recipes.
Sure. Also, fall colors. You can take a drive. I guess through your site, exploreminnesota.com, you can sign up for the fall color updates, right? You'll get notified via email.
Yep, for the next couple weeks, you can still sign up at exploreminnesota.com/fallcolor. Sign up for the fall color updates, and you know, we have plenty of resources to go along with it. We want people to get out there and explore our rainbow routes while they can. Like I said, we're at peak across many, many parts of the state, so it's really not going to last much longer. So get out there while you can.
We're visiting with Alyssa Hayes. She is with us from Explore Minnesota Tourism, and we're talking about the 10 things to do based on this posting up on their website, exploreminnesota.com. You know, there's also the rainbow routes that are really handy in suggesting, you know, maybe how you might want to plan a weekend getaway or a trip or whatever. Number five on the list here, go see a show. I mean, for goodness sake. We've got some great entertainment venues from theater and just music venues to, you know, a local music act just down the street.
So much. You know, I'm right here in the Twin Cities, so top of mind, some things that come to my mind are the Guthrie Theater, there's the State Theater, there's the Orpheum. I mean, there's so many things here right in the Twin Cities. And then there's, of course, so much more throughout the state to, you know, get out there and do something fun, something different. There's always something new and unique to do across the state.
Yeah, and, you know, just stepping back to the museum thing, if people haven't had a chance to go, you know, check out Paisley Park and Chanhassen and the Prince.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's just amazing. Number six is sip the local flavors, the craft beer scene. You know, Surly is still at the top of my list. I just love the way they have those picnic tables and the beer garden, bratwurst kind of atmosphere. They pair those beers with those foods so remarkably well.
Right. Minnesota is definitely, you know, in the fall, you know, we've got a great harvest season here. So we promise delicious food, but we also promise plenty of tasty things to drink. And our craft beverage scene is very vibrant across the state.
Yeah.
We have hundreds of breweries and wineries and cideries across the state. We actually partnered with the Growler magazine on this super cool interactive Land of 10,000 Drinks map, and it helps travelers discover the different craft beverage venues based on location or amenities.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I had clicked on that too, and I went, wow, you know, I could plan an entire year or two around visiting
right.
all of these things. We got to talk about the Vikings and, you know, cheering for the home team. You got the Gophers, and let's not forget Minnesota United, the soccer team, because there's a lot of excitement about this soccer team and, you know, with the new green line from St. Paul and what's going on with their stadium efforts down the road here. There's a lot to get fired up about.
Yeah, it's a great time to be in Minnesota. We have a lot of great sports, and, you know, what a way to, you know, we have reason to highlight our sports scene. We're the home to Super Bowl 52 in 2018.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
And you can take a tour of the U.S. Bank Stadium. I did that a while back. I highly recommend it. There's a cost involved with it, but you know what? It's... wow, what an amazing facility that is. If you've been to other stadiums around the country like Lambeau and Soldier Field and down in Dallas. That's another amazing thing. But I would say this is the premier stadium right now in the NFL.
Yeah, it's very state of the art, and it's really, really cool.
Yeah, well, it'll blow you away on just the luxury boxes and everything else there.
Mm-hmm.
Also on the list at number 8, attend a Harvest Festival. You got a lot of great stuff listed here, including the Apple Fest and Catapult Contest, which happens in Alexandria.
We have so many things. All the fall festivals across the state, they cover everything from pumpkin weigh-offs to scarecrow contests. There's craft fairs, hay rides, there's fall flavors, of course. And Explore Minnesota has a really great event database that highlights hundreds of events yet this fall. I think I was telling people the beginning of September this year, we had 1,000-plus events across the state this fall. You know, now we're nearing middle of fall, I guess. So we don't have quite as many left, but still hundreds of events that are on our database.
And you were talking about Instagramming and photo opportunities. You can't beat the Stillwater Giant Pumpkin Boat Race. That's pretty awesome.
Oh, that's really, yeah, it's very cool.
And down in New Ulm, they call themselves Minnesota's most German town, and I would have to agree. Oktoberfest. I mean, come on, really.
They had their Oktoberfest already, but it's one of the largest in the nation.
Well, I think you can still go down
because
there.
Because it's one of America's most German town. You can have your own little Oktoberfest.
Well, you know, I think the fine folks at Shell's and everyone else, plus you might, you know, just want to make that a little bit of a sometime October visit and event. And finally,
yeah, it's beautiful.
Yep. In Anoka, the Halloween capital of the world, and that parade is really spectacular. That's worth checking out. And the zombie pub crawl, that thing has gotten huge here in Minneapolis.
Yeah, that happened last weekend, I believe, and that is it's every year it has incredible numbers. And it's everywhere you go in Minneapolis, whether you're in the official zombie pub crawl zone or not, I mean, there's zombies crawling throughout, throughout the Twin Cities. But yeah, that Anoka Halloween Festival, it is one of the biggest in the state, absolutely, and it's a pretty long running festival. I don't have the exact dates right in front of me, but it's one of the best across the state, that's for sure.
And if I could just mention, speaking of zombies, if you get a chance, check it out on YouTube. There's a song called Zombie with a Shotgun, and it's by a local group here called Astro Beard. And my wife and daughter and a couple of our friends, we were all zombies as extras in the shooting for that music video, and it really turned out spectacularly well. I was quite impressed with not only the singing ability of Astro Beard and the musicianship, but also the folks that put that video together. It's top notch. Good stuff. Well, it's been a real pleasure visiting with you, Alyssa.
It's been a great time. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on WCCO all the time.
Alyssa Hayes with us, and you can check out again more at the website, which is exploreminnesota.com. We've been going through their 10 things to do this fall. Have a great evening. Thanks for joining us.
You too. Thank you. Have a great rest of your fall.
Coming up here when we come back, Emilio Estevez is Hollywood's most profitable actor? We'll explain the math behind that next. Well, Saturday night in CCO land, Moose Miller in tonight for Esme Murphy. Kevin Reed working hard there behind the scenes for us. So, turns out, and I'm reading this from the New York Post here, Emilio Estevez is the most profitable star of the past 30 years. For every dollar that a producer spends on a movie of his, or, you know, to hire him, $6.70 was made. Brad Pitt is the least profitable actor. So the star of Young Guns and Mighty Ducks brings in $6.70 to every buck that you pay him. This is since 1980. followed by Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's number two on the list with $4.20. Mel Gibson at number three with $3.50. Tyler Perry and Dudley Moore each bringing in $3. And it turns out that Brad Pitt, the least profitable actor, only generating 10 cents for every dollar spent. Rose Byrne, though, beats them all. She does much better than the men. For every dollar you spend on her, she generates $9.80, followed by Regina Hall and Octavia Spencer. We'll check that WCCO weather forecast for you coming up here next.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
So what is positive proximity, and why is it such a good thing when it comes to small towns across the country? Our guest is about to explain. Dar Williams, musician and author, joins us here on the Esme Murphy Show. I'm Moose Miller. Good evening and welcome, Dar.
Thank you.
We reached out to you because I read about you here recently. What playing music in small towns has taught Dar Williams about America. And you actually compiled a story here of what I found in 1,000 towns. It's a new book that just came out in September of this year. You're a musician, and how long have you been kind of traveling around, performing, singing, all of that stuff?
Over 20 years, maybe 23.
Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of came across a common denominator as to towns that really seem to have it going on.
Yeah. I called it positive proximity. And that means, and basically you go into a town and you feel it. I mean, I'm a musician, so I'm allowed to sort of talk the groovy talk. You feel it in the air, but I'm sure you could identify it. You know, there are stores that say, welcome, come in. I saw a store recently that said, come on in, we're awesome. you see, you know, dog walkers talking to each other. You go to venues where the audience wants to talk to each other during the intermission, and they like to talk to each other on the line when they're getting their CD signed at the end of the night. You know, it's this thing that I call positive proximity, where people have a sense of that living around other people is a positive, is a good force. You know, it's a constructive force that you have all those people around you, as opposed to real, you know, pain and inconvenience. The towns that thrive have positive proximity, and the towns that don't.
You know what? I noticed you right here. These towns have more signs that say free coffee instead of no bathroom.
Right. and there's variations on that. You know, there's, interestingly, you know, sometimes you'll go to a place where you have stores that are really fancy, but it doesn't fit the town at all. You know, so it just doesn't. So it's very sparkly and fancy, but very cold to the touch. So other stores will kind of reflect what I call the VR ratio, which is visitor resident. So, you know, it's got sparkly stuff for people passing through your downtown, which is nice. And then it's got, you know, shovels and aspirin and things like that. So, there are people who work there who like you, you know. So that's a downtown is a very important engine. It's not the only way to have positive proximity in a town, but it really helps.
What, you know, when you talk about these towns, what are we talking about size wise? Because, you know, to put things in perspective, just in my selfish little world, my wife grew up in a town of about 1,200 people called Mechanicsville, Iowa. She grew up on a farm outside of there. And, you know, that to me is a town. I think of that, and the local coffee is, you know, something that everybody gathers at in the morning and sits around and gossips and talks. And that to me is a town.
Yeah, that to me is a town, too. I think that's a wonderful, you know, sometimes, I mean, there are a few things that are hard to kind of put your finger on, like, people ask me about density, you know, is there a sort of a critical mass of density? But, you know, I heard of a place in rural Massachusetts where this kid said that everybody would gather, and it was a convenience store. And that was what did it for them. So people, if there is that place where people can talk to each other, and kind of have that value and have that understanding that, you know, their town is theirs, whether that means how you govern it mm-hmm. or when problems come up or when visitors come through and you feel proud as opposed to kind of nervous. That's the feel of a town. And
sure.
So wherever you have that place where people gab and drink coffee, in my experience, is a very healthy place.
Well, you write in your book, and I want to mention this again, What I Found in a Thousand Towns. It's by Dar Williams. Dar Williams is our guest. She writes and performs music and has done so for 20 years, performing all over the country, and has really kind of collected and picked up on some common denominators of what makes, you know, towns, some towns, you know, much more alive and inviting and enveloping of you know, people that might be visiting or just passing through. But you also talk about Minnesota. And, you know, before we jumped on the air here, we were talking about Minnesota. And I wanted to start with up in Duluth, Minnesota, you know, because you definitely kind of picked up on some things there. What did a singer-songwriter from New York off the Hudson River, upstate New York, find out about Duluth there that you can share with us?
Well, you know, it's got positive proximity. and the promoter who brought me into his space had basically inherited a church to become a community space. And he was a person who is what I would call a conscious bridger. You know, you sense that someone gave him a space and he was thinking in bridges. So he has a recording studio for all sorts of people to work with, you know, including teenagers. And he does a lot of work with teenagers and a lot of work with the community around there. The church is in a neighborhood that's more the low-income neighborhood, so he's always thinking of ways to bridge out, to offer the space and and music lessons and expertise that from, you know, his friends to that neighborhood. So so I saw that kind of ethos in the air, and he wasn't the only one. I'd performed up there at the college. And sort of seeing that in the colleges, you know, in the campus as well, the sort of thinking in bridges. I don't know how else to describe it, except that you also see it in their coffee houses, and you also see it in their stores, and you know, the way that the person chats with you, and you say, "I'm from New York," and they say, "Oh, that's nice. How's New York doing?" as opposed to, "Ew."
See, when I hear somebody says they're from New York, I want to know, outstate New York or like New York, New York?
Right. Yeah, there's a difference, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not from New York, but I did live there for 3 years. It's true. I mean, anywhere in the country, it's like everywhere in the country. I mean, Western New York is a lot like other beautiful, rural, proud parts of the country. But, you know, generally, that sense, in my mind, it's sort of like hands extended with, you know, upturned palms as opposed to clenched fists.
Interesting.
When you walk into a town. So Duluth has that.
Yeah, let's move on to St. Cloud, Minnesota, because, you know, we talked a little bit about this before we jumped on the air here. And, you know, the other thing that I think it would be interesting to get your perspective on is, as we've seen more, you know, immigrants and assimilation into different parts of the country, I would imagine that's something that you've probably picked up on and noticed as you've traveled around towns around the country.
Yeah, it's a good thing for towns where they recognize it as a good thing. And, you know, what I saw towns that were, you know, drug deals on every corner and no jobs and shuttered up storefronts and those things. You know, I saw a few years of those in the mid-90s. There was this industrial downturn and there was the rise of the malls and then the big boxes that followed. And I saw that consequence, you know. And so what I was documenting at first was how these towns found their stability, how they came into, you know, a local economy, how they recovered and found stability. and how they found that relationship to each other so that they could build a local economy. Then there's this other thing that happens once you have stability, which is a sense of celebration of your identity. So you have a garlic festival. You know, you have things that are uniquely your own, and they don't have to be super fancy. They just have to be yours. And so if you have a population that comes in, like in Moab, Utah, they had somebody at the church, one of the churches recognized that there was a whole population of people working in the hotels and some of the restaurants who didn't speak English. They spoke Spanish. And I don't know if they're from Mexico or farther south, but there was this kind of, how are we going to bring these members of our community in? They're not speaking English, and they're not, you know, but this is our community, and they're not feeling access. So they have a Day of the Dead festival. After Halloween. And it is a huge, and actually the person who described it to me, she got very tearful, and she said, you know, people die in our community, you know, 3 or 4 people, and it's very sad, and it's very acute and traumatic. But on the Day of the Dead festival, months later, we go back and we remember them again as members of the community. And she just started to cry, and she said, it's so special because that's a different way of remembering them and to understand who they've been in this town of 7,000. And they also have a Dancing with the Stars night where six women from Latina women dance with, as one guy said, six gringo guys. And it's a huge event. And there's all of this great food, and it's completely a hot ticket. So towns that understand how to bring in the cultures of the people who immigrate to them and celebrate them, who extend their hands and say, how can we make this fabric strong for everybody? They do well. They do well. And towns that don't welcome immigrants, you know,
sure,
it's a way. It's a sad waste.
That's interesting.
To not understand how to bring in new voices.
Because Moab, I've been out in that part of the country. That's kind of close to Monument Valley, from what I remember.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, you know, Western feel, because a lot of Westerns were shot out there. But wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
How about you know, like St. Cloud, Minnesota, or Minneapolis? Did you get a vibe or travel through those cities, and can you share any observations?
Yeah. You know, St. Cloud, I realized I've only been to St. Cloud twice, and both times I experienced the venue that I played in, the theater in the middle of town, as such a wonderful engine. And I feel like the people who run it understand that they're not just bringing in concerts. They are a part of the engine of the whole community. And I think that that's a really good attitude. That's something that I would call translation.
Sure.
And also, you know, the way that we concentrate on culture. They know that the venue will be translating the world to the community and welcoming the community in to find one another and talk to one another. And it's a social space and a cultural space and a place with all these concerts and all of the hard work that they're doing. So I love that. Like they seem to have a sense of mission, a strong sense of mission. And then the Twin Cities are, you know, show us. I mean, if you look at the Jayhawks and Prince and, gosh, tons of great bands that come out of the Twin Cities. And then you look at sort of the way that the Twin Cities have valued culture. It's got the highest per capita number of people employed in the sort of knowledge fields, somebody told me. It's very literate. But all that attention has been put into creating literacy and culture for everybody. There are all these programs, and the museums are amazing, and the music scene is very strong. So lo and behold, you see either musicians moving there to make music, or you have people who are raised in Minnesota who get to find out who they are culturally, artistically, as well as in other ways. And you have that sense of those institutions become reinforced, whether it's the Fitzgerald Theater and Prairie Home Companion or the Guthrie Theater, which is amazing. I mean, it's such a top to bottom cultural institution.
Yeah.
So, you know, then you get that. So it becomes a positive feedback circle. I love it. I love both cities.
I'll tell you what, it's an interesting read and something worth checking out. Dar Williams has been our guest. She just authored What I Found in a Thousand Towns. And she plays music all over the country in small towns and kind of collected well over two decades of experiences here. Thanks so much for joining us here on WCCO Radio.
Thank you so much.
Our WCCO McCarthy Auto World time is 6:53. You can save up to $6,000 on 2017 GMC Acadias and get a free pumpkin with any test drive during the fall huge clearance event at McCarthy Auto World in Coon Rapids. Well, coming up here after CBS News and a check-in with the WCCO local newsroom, it's known as a crack attack on Wi-Fi systems that can let attackers hijack your Wi-Fi traffic, steal passwords, and even inject malware into smartphones and laptops. Yikes! Yeah, it's called crack, a key reinstallation attack, and our cybersecurity experts can explain what it is, and more importantly, how you can protect your router from a crack flaw, and also what we should be doing when it comes to the use of public Wi-Fi. So that's all coming up here in the 7 o'clock hour on the Esme Murphy Show, right here on WCCO.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.